You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam,
Nisiaya, and the Skakuya, Talitin, Homasquim, Astail. All right. Hello, listeners. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. You're also listening to the show is Dog-Eared Radio Book Club, and I'm your host, Randy. I'm quite excited to be here tonight, even though it is raining outside, but I feel like that just makes me feel more at home, because what is Vancouver without rain? And I think we were all spoiled a little bit too much with all of that sunshine. I mean, who are we kidding? But I'm quite excited. This is the last night of the monster romance season for Dog-Eared Radio Book Club, and we will be picking it back up in 2 weeks with a new season with a new topic, which I will explain more at the end, so you have to listen to the whole episode. But today we are talking about the book The Curse Girl by Kate Avery Ellison. This is a YA novel, I'm going to call it. The lead character is 17, so this is a very different book than I think every other book that we read in this season. But I still think it's really good, and I have actually quite a bit to say about it that I can actually say on public radio. So that was a really good choice, to choose a book that you can actually talk about the entire thing on public radio. But before we get to that, I just want to drop again, please follow us on social media at Dog-Eared Radio Book Club. And then you can also always reach us at email at dogearedbookclubradio@gmail.com. Before we get into the book, let me introduce our co-host today, our lovely guests that have been here numerous times before, but I'm always happy to have them. Welcome, Georgia, and welcome, Laura. How are you on this fine Tuesday?
We're really good today. Thanks for asking. Happy Halloween, almost.
Yep.
Awesome. Yeah. Yep. Is it raining in Toronto?
Nope.
No.
It's been sunny.
Yeah, pretty good weather. We had a few days of rain, but it's nice now.
That's good. Yeah. Well, we're moving into our rainy season, so I can't relate. Oh, no. But, you know, like I said, we're here. We're ready. But I'm very happy to have you again on the show. I guess we'll just dive into the book. Overall general reactions. Laura, this was your suggestion for a read. So why don't you start us off with why did you recommend this book?
Yeah. Well, I recommended it because I was trying to think of all the books that kind of fit into the beastly theme we were going for. And something, I didn't want all of them to be very, you know, adult steamy books. Mm-hmm. And this was the only one I could really come up with that was, you know, YA fun, kind of beastly fairy tale retelling. And, you know, I reread it quite a bit for some parts. I like it. So I thought it'd be good to recommend.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah, I completely agree. I would have ate this book up as a teenager. Like, if I was 15 and you handed me this book, I would have adored it and loved it. So I think it was a good selection because, yeah, it was really nice to post the book on Instagram and not have to put a billion content warnings. So I think that was pretty good. But Georgia, just very quick, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely agree that when I was in junior high, I definitely would have liked this book. I think it's like a better YA retelling of Beauty and the Beast, and it kind of ironed out some of the main problems I have with the story of Beauty and the Beast, so I appreciated that.
Yeah. No, I think that's a fair evaluation. But to the listeners out there that are like, I didn't read the book, I don't know what you're talking about, I'm going to read the plot right now. So I'm going to read the description that came on Kobo. I specify because I realized every description I found of this book, like the plot description, was different, which I thought was really interesting. So I'm going to read the one that I have because I bought this book on Kobo when I read it. And then we'll decide whether or not that, you know, succinctly describes what's going to happen in the book. All right, so here we go. When her father tries to steal magic from the mysterious beastly master of the Curse House outside her hometown, 17-year-old Beauty is the one who becomes a prisoner of the beast in reparation. Will isn't anything like she expected. He's the same age as she is, for one thing. He's also really handsome, contrary to local legend. Well, maybe the whole, quote, beast thing is meant to be metaphorical, because he's a total jerk. Between the house's weird magic and Will's snobby attitude, the situation is nearly unbearable, and Beauty only wants to escape. But there are complications. The witch who cursed Will left him a riddle to solve and 4 years to figure it out. And now that Beauty's become a part of this, messed up fairy tale, she'd better help Will figure out the riddle so they can break the curse, or she's going to remain a prisoner in the curse house too, because the 4 years are almost up. So yeah, that is the description that I had going into the book. Granted, like I said, I don't really read them anymore, because when I have to read the book, I'm like, you know, why expect anything? Why not just go in and have fun with what I get? But yeah, what are the overall thoughts of that? I actually think it's pretty good. I do have a couple things that they specify in this, like the 4 year thing, because they don't specify that the time is 4 years. But I guess you're just it's kind of implied, because they're it's been 4 years and it's running out of time. But that's obviously a very small nitpicky thing. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was definitely, when you read the 4 years, I was like, wait, what? Locked there? Because I didn't get that when I read the book. Definitely didn't get that, the 4 years. Because in the book, they've been trapped there, he and his sister and, you know, housekeeper, all the traditional kind of characters in Beauty, well, not the traditional characters in Beauty and the Beast, but reimaginings of them, have been trapped there for a century or so, right? Mm-hmm. Centuries.
Yeah.
So the fact that she's there for 4 years, but then they must be saying 4 years in, because they say in the book, they clarify that time moves differently in the house versus outside.
Yeah. 4 years. They say that 4 years has passed. He got cursed when he was 14, and now he's 18.
Yeah.
And time is running out. But yeah, outside of the house, almost a century has passed. Although, I think the description's pretty good. I would have appreciated, some more dates, when this book takes place.
Yeah.
And when that happened, what old, because they say he's old-timey, but I don't know what time he's from. So, honestly, I think the description could have used that to explain it. I think it would have added some mystery to it, too.
Yeah. I think that's fair, yeah. It's fair. I mean, I took it to be, he would have lived during the... See, now I'm blanking, but the period of romance novels that I really the 1830, that type. I feel like that was kind of during that. There's a name. Does anybody remember the name of that period?
Regency?
Yeah, the Regency. Yeah. I took it to mean the Regency era.
When do you think the book, the modern takes place?
Oh, whenever it's published. So, I don't know, 2010?
Okay. I was definitely confused by that, because, they have movies, cars, other stuff, but there was, no cell phone, so I was like, maybe this is, earlier?
Yeah. You are right. Also, I just realized he says there's a part where he's like, oh, we had movies before I was cursed.
Yeah.
So it couldn't have been. Pictures. I don't know. So whenever the moving picture was created is when this is based. Because, but then he talks about courting, and he's like, we had balls. It's very weird. I think it's maybe that's why there's no timeline, because it's not realistic. Because everything you described is what, when you read a Victorian romance novel, that's exactly what you're getting. He's describing that type. And I don't know if that was the same behavior during, because this is based in the States, right? This is supposed to be based in the U.S.
Yeah.
Again, where, I have no idea, because they don't tell us the state, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, yeah, in the introduction or in the plot summary, I think it could have used that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's not much of an intro before she's, like, kind of thrown into the house, which I appreciate it, because it gets the story moving, but
yeah,
we don't have a lot of context.
Yeah. Yeah, I will say, I think context is my biggest problem with this novel. I'll touch on this more later, but I did make a note after, like, you know, is this description accurate? I did make a note where it said, like, I still don't understand what her father did. Because in this description, it says that her father tries to steal magic. But that's never specified in the book. But there's the part where, like, Will is relaying the story of her father coming to the house. And he's like, I forget exactly what he says, but essentially, like, you know, he came and then when he left, he had a mark on him. So, like, in retaliation, she had to go to the house. But then she's like, oh, he was here for my stepmother. So, like, were we supposed to be led to believe that he was stealing magic to save her stepmother from the, like, her disease? Is that? I was just very confused. I was like, why were you in the house? Like, I don't understand.
Well, at one part, they say that he came asking for help, too. So he wasn't stealing magic. He came and begged to have some more, like, time, I think, because he heard that time moves differently and, like, maybe immortality, I think. He might have thought that that's what he could get, so therefore could save her. But all it was is that the house moves at a different time, and they're not actually immortal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what I got out of it, that he wants time for his wife. And was it something to do with the locket? Did he know about the locket, the curse, or is it a bracelet?
It was a mark,
but then he does give up because he knows about the curse, because I guess the whole town knows about the curse, similar to Beauty and the Beast. And he says he can give them a beauty to help solve their riddle, which is his daughter.
Yeah. I feel like that's a bit of a plot hole that I have that I just don't. I wish, because also this did what so many teen novels do. It's like, my family's evil, but also I love them and they're fine. But my family's really evil and I don't like them and they're mean, but also they're fine. And I'm like, I felt like it was just kind of like wishy-washy, which I get. Like, you don't want to, like, villainize and it's complicated. But I think, I don't know, that kind of always gets to me, because I'm like, just, like, clearly define the relationship. Because, like, as a reader, I kind of, I don't know, I wanted a villain. And, like, I know the witch is supposed to be the villain in this, but I feel like I wanted another villain. I'm greedy and I wanted more villains. I just rewatched the Descendants trilogy on Disney Plus. That's my favorite Disney movie. So I'm in the mood to read about some villains.
And, yeah, it kind of feels like, what our dad did is pretty terrible. He banished his daughter for, 4 years. I don't know if that's, presumably, not 4 years. The curse has been going on for 4 years.
Yeah. Well, eternity. People, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Although he ages 4 years. Yeah, so confusing. But, her dad banished her. And she frees herself from the house, so does she just continue on living with her family?
Well, they left.
Yeah.
That's how it ends. They left.
Yeah, but then she's like, we have to go find them in the city. Also, I love when they're like, in the city. They went to the city. We have to go find them in the city.
That's where I kind of was thinking it was like, maybe not in modern times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the city, or rural area. I feel like that's not a term we use now. Like, I don't know if it ever was a term, though.
So maybe it's supposed to be... Go ahead, Laura.
Her dad, like, banished her to this curse and then ditched her?
Yeah. To get cancer treatment for the stepmom. I was sort of getting the idea. I almost thought that it was like Cinderella plus Beauty and the Beast because she has two stepsisters and a stepmother, and her dad's kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
So that's sort of what I was getting.
It totally was, but okay, this is what I'm getting at. It completely was a Beauty and the Beast retelling and a Cinderella retelling, but they didn't lean into it because, like, she talked about how, like, her sisters would treat her so badly. Her stepsisters wouldn't talk to her in public. Like, they wouldn't talk to her at school, but she's like, oh, but I love them so much. And they're older than me, but I love them. And I'm like, they're literally bullying you. Like, why are you forgiving them? And so I totally felt like that. And then there was, like, the part where she just dropped. She's, like, casually, like, oh, I don't even know if my father's really my father. And that never went anywhere. And I was like, why is that in there? That's, like, why are you leading us on this path that is clearly going nowhere and we're not getting any more information? Yeah, I was confused. Yeah.
In terms of the ending, yeah, I felt like there were some unanswered questions, just, and it sort of, like, rushed at the end.
Yeah.
Which did leave some answers, but plot, I guess, was completed.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that's always with these YA books, the ending is just kind of rushed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's too bad, because, like, the ending could pull it together so well, and, like, you know, make it seem more complex by finishing off those other side mysteries. Instead, they leave them, and it just makes the book seem overall messy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. All right, well, before we dive into the plot anymore, I do want to chat about the characters. I don't know if there's a whole lot to talk about the characters here. In my notes, I legitimately just put that, like, Will is, like, a very basic, like, YA hero. He's got dark hair, he's got blue eyes, like, I don't there's really nothing, like, you know, what every 17-year-old girl wants, like,
yeah he was pretty basic cookie cutter guy. He had a scar though, so he's interesting. Didn't lean into serious. The Beast as much as the original Beauty and the Beast, but you know, sometimes that's good not to have a weird humanoid animal beast to fall in love with.
Yeah, not everyone's into
that. Yeah, it's good to offer a different version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will say, honestly, this book was a breath of fresh air because I went into, like, a very dark side of monster romance, which is, like, you know, when we were talking about how, like, monster romance, like, toes the line and then some of it goes over the line. So I read one that, in my opinion, went over the line, and it was a Beauty and the Beast retelling, but it was imagining if, like, he never transitioned out of being the Beast.
Right, of course.
And it was very disturbing. I'm not going to say who wrote it or what it's called, but all I'm saying is, like, this book was so much nicer to read and so much less uncomfortable, and I think that's a really important, you know, thing I will say to authors out there. When you're writing monster romance, that's great and that's good, but, like, you know, get back over the line, just, you know. But yeah, so I did enjoy this book after reading that, because I was like, I liked it. I feel like it was a lot more, like I said, I feel like this was exactly what I wanted to read when I was, like, 14. I don't know if anyone remembers the series The Summoning by, I think it was, like, Samantha Young or something. I'll look it up.
I don't think I've read that.
I think it was The Summit. Okay, hold on. Let's see. So it was, oh, I think the series was called Darkest Power. And it was a paranormal novel series by Kelly Armstrong. And the first book was called The Summoning. Funny story, I did reread this book 2 years ago, and I wouldn't say that it holds up to my now, you know, early 20s brain, but as a 14-year-old, I thought it was the greatest book ever written. So I do think this book would have been fantastic because, yeah, it does take, like, the fantasy and Also, I feel like the imagination of, like, you know, the grand house, the grand library, like the idea that, like, the house is shifting and moving, like, those things are very cool to read when you're that age with your imagination, because you can, like, think about and start to, like, see that. Yeah. And I think beauty definitely was just, like, a basic, again, like, a pretty basic 17-year-old girl, like,
yeah, I couldn't define her personality traits.
No.
Mm-hmm. Like, although I did like how she wasn't a reader. She liked to just storybooks.
Yes, that was
cool. I'm not like other girls. I know how to read. She's more, I don't know, I'm not like other girls. I destroy books and make origami.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the origami trait was interesting, and also because the fact that, like, it was established, it had a backstory, and then it actually contributed mm-hmm. to the plot. Those three things, mm-hmm. like, that was really good, because a lot of times, yeah, when you introduce a characteristic or a trait or a hobby, and then you don't connect it to the larger plot, it feels like you're just, I don't know, it comes across as a little bit, like, off and strange. So I thought that was actually really good that they were like, well, you know, her grandma taught her how to do this. She does it when she's stressed out. And, you know, and then it contributes to the plot in the fact that, you know, things she creates have magic and then they become real.
Yeah. No, I thought that was cool, too. That was, like, her power in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's smarter than Will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
I definitely wish her name wasn't Beauty, but
yeah.
I just every time it's just such a weird name, too, and it, like, I don't know. It's weird because it's one of those words that I feel like doesn't translate as a name.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe I just haven't heard it enough because I've never heard of someone being named Beauty, like. Beau. But
yeah,
it was like kind of jarring every time this little character would say Beauty as her name.
Yeah, I have to say, like, because I didn't read the description and I didn't clue in that this was a Beauty and the Beast retelling, it was like when I was reading the book, I was like, oh, she's going to a cursed house, blah blah blah, and then as soon as they're like, oh, you're Beauty, I was like, yeah, okay, well, that's a little bit too on the nose. I know exactly what's happening now. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it took away, but I do agree it did. It was a little bit jarring when you were, like, reading the book immersed in it and someone would call her, like, name Beauty. You'd be like, well,
yeah.
I don't know.
I wish they used B more.
Yeah.
Because I thought that was better. But I was surprised. Like, I thought they were just going to use B, but they used Beauty more times than I thought they would.
Yeah. I'm just imagine, like, if you were, like, if you knew someone and you were, like, trying to get their attention and their name was Beauty, can you imagine just, like, yelling, Beauty, Beauty,
yeah.
Where are you, Beauty? Like, I can't, I can't imagine doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it would have, I feel like the way I would have done it is just give her a different name or, like, name her Beau. You know, you could have named her Beau, and then maybe her grandma's nickname for her was Beauty, and that's why she's known as Beauty. Mm. So it was like a nickname, but
yeah, that would have been good.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really interesting, the I flag the character descriptions in this book. I don't know if I'll be able to find them because I have a lot of annotations, but again, I thought it was refreshing after some of the character descriptions we had to listen to and read in the previous novels that we read, in the fact that these were just character descriptions of a character. Like, you know, this is a man who's 17 yeah. with blue eyes. And so, like, I enjoyed not having to use every single brain cell that I have left to try to construct this picture of this creature who's not I don't know. I always forget this word that, you know, doesn't make sense.
Yeah, totally. Especially when they don't follow up on these weird traits they give us. Yeah. I was like, yeah, just stick to normal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what I do like about the two characters Because I thought they had some pretty, like, decent arguments in that I wasn't, like, rolling my eyes quite as much as, like, compared to, like, Sweet Ruin, where those arguments were just insufferable and she'd easily be distracted by, I don't know, his, like, abs or muscles. What?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
I feel like they still didn't go on long enough in this book, though.
Yeah. Yeah,
they weren't perfect, but they were less insufferable than some.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I feel like this book, they also did take the, like, he's a jerk, and it lasted a little bit longer than some of the books we've read with that same description where he says one thing, and that's it being a jerk, and then it's over.
Yeah.
So I like that they carried. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's rude for a while, and I appreciate that it doesn't just immediately solve itself.
Yeah.
After one encounter.
Yeah, they did a good job of making him seem just like a grumpy kid when she first shows up.
That's true.
Yeah, and yeah, they were so, like, I feel like unhelpful to her when she showed up. Like, they could have done some. Sorry, I'm getting distracted.
I'm sorry, what is going on with your camera, Laura?
I don't know. I think there's a new thing with Apple where it, like, zooms. It finds something to focus on.
It's giving us just body pans. Like, it's just panning your body repeatedly. This is very strange.
I'm trying to find my face, I think.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. let's try to get back on track.
Oh, that, like, she asks over and over again, like, for them to explain the curse to her. And they're like, they do it in, like, little bits. I was like, come on, tell her. At this point, what do you have to lose? Just tell her what's happening. And then, like, she doesn't even figure out the full story for a long time. And I was like,
yeah.
And I don't get why he's so mad at her at first. She's been brought here against her will.
Yeah. Yeah. And he, like, doesn't try to see it from her perspective at all. And, like, but I would get that if he was trapped in there for, like, 100 years. But he was only trapped there for 4 years.
Yeah, he's only trapped there for 4 years.
I know. Like, that's not that bad, honestly.
Yeah, it's not that bad. That's just a university degree.
Okay. Like, okay.
calm down, man.
All you have to do is become a beast every night. Like, who doesn't?
All right. Oh, yeah. I think we're really doing really well on the empathy train here. We're really trying to understand.
Compared to, like, 7,000 years or something.
I don't know. Years. We read a book previously where the hero was thousands of years old.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I will say, yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, I think because in his perspective, he has been trapped there for 100 years because he thinks about it as, like, how much time has passed outside. But you are correct. It has only been 4 years. And you know what? At this point in my life, I would be fine to be trapped in a house in the middle of nowhere with food. Like, are you kidding me? Food that just magically appears? We don't even know if you have to cook it, okay? It's never established that you have to cook food, okay? Also, because you just have a staff that does everything for you. Granted, they are cursed, and, like, that would be really sad. And they seem sad. Yeah. But, like, you know?
It's true.
It's not Beauty's fault. It's not Beauty's fault that they're cursed. That's, well.
I guess the thing is, like, that he doesn't sleep, or I don't know.
So that's why he's cranky?
He can't sleep at night.
Because he can't sleep.
Yeah, so he can only sleep for a couple hours. But, like, why wouldn't you just be nocturnal then?
Yeah, I'd be pretty grumpy if I couldn't sleep either.
Yeah, because I'm too busy turning into a beast.
But obviously, like, it's a YA book. Like, I don't think they can write a YA book without there being enemies to more.
Yeah,
that's true. Attention. It's kind of the cookie cutter for a YA book. But yeah, it is completely different. But I mean, when you're not writing a novel with a plot just to get to the spicy stuff, you can actually draw out your character tension. You don't just have to eliminate it at 30% of the novel to have the first spicy scene.
Exactly.
So it sets up a different dynamic. All right. Well, we're going to take a very quick ad break. And when we come back, we will, I think, probably discuss a bit more about the plot, hopefully.
You know what I could go for right now? Authentic flour tortillas pan-fried until golden brown.
Yum!
Or vegan taco kits filled with traditional Mexican chilies and spices.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Or how about vegan potato and chorizo taquitos?
How can I get these foods immediately?
Buy Lita's Mexican Foods.
Sounds delicious. Tell me more.
Lita's Mexican Foods is a female-managed, plant-based Mexican food innovator in BC. Their products come prepackaged and frozen at tons of local grocery stores around Metro Vancouver. Not to mention they can be cooked in under 10 minutes.
Wow, that sounds perfect for me. I've been so busy lately and dinner takes so long to make. Where can I get my hands on some Lita's Mexican Foods?
Lots of places. Whole Foods, Choices, Stong's, Vegan Supply, Donald's, and even UBC Bookstore. Hey, where are you going?
To buy some Lita's Mexican Foods. See you later.
See ya.
Are you interested in conversations about intersectionality? Listen to Intersections, presented by CITR 101.9 FM's Intersectionality Collective, a show where we tackle a range of topics that impact gender, race, sexuality, and social justice, like anti-fat bias, understanding microaggressions, and racism in the food industry. Tune into Intersections bi-weekly on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM. Each episode will feature either a panel discussion from the members of the Intersectionality Collective or an expert on that week's topic. So tune in and also check out our episode archive on citr.ca/intersections.
CITR is powered by Guayaquil Yerba Mate. Yerba Mate is a naturally caffeinated drink that comes in a variety of formats, from loose leaf to cans to bottles. Yes, the yellow ones. Guayaquil Mate is all organic, non-GMO, and sure to make you come to life. Guayaquil is more than just a yerba mate brand. They're focused on personal, social, ecological, and cultural growth through their commitment to regenerative practices, which include stewarding the South Atlantic rainforest and partnering with indigenous South American communities through the production of yerba mate. Visit guayaquil.com, G-U-A-Y-A-K-I.com, to learn more and find this delicious drink near you. Or stop by CITR station on UBC campus for a free yerba mate can.
Are you looking for Halloween plans? The Forever Underdog Kids Club presents Monster Mash, happening October 29th at 7:30 at the Smiling Buddha Cabaret. Tickets can be purchased at the venue before the show, with a headlining act from musician Xavian, along with live music from Maya Ray, Trey Denzel, Max Green, and more. Plus, comedy acts, local pop-up shops, and a costume contest, with a prize for the winner.
All right, welcome back. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. You're also listening to the show Dog-Eared Radio Book Club. I got to get smoother at that transition. But I am Randy, your host, and I am also joined by my co-hosts today, Georgia and Laura. And we are talking about the book The Cursed Girl by Kate Avery Ellison, a YA retelling of a classic Beauty and the Beast. So we kind of just left off, I think, talking about the characters a little bit, establishing how they're a little bit cookie cutter, but in a good way, maybe. But I think maybe we should dive into the plot now, because I think we have a bit more to say about the plot than the characters themselves. But let's start off with different likes and dislikes about the plot. So I did, in general, enjoy this book. I thought that it was a relatively fresh take on Beauty and the Beast. Like, it didn't feel repetitive, even though it was a retelling. I thought the curse at least the parts that they explained to us were good. They were interesting, like the impact on like the staff of the house. I think the sister, like Will having a little sister, was interesting, even though she was only in very small parts of the book. But yeah, I thought overall that was good. And I also think that she interacted with the Beast as Liam. Obviously, it was Will. I think we all got that. but I still thought that was, like, pretty creative. I do think, again, we can get to the ending later, but I think it was wrapped up too nicely at the end. But, yeah, all in all, I did find this kind of, yeah, a pretty good retelling of kind of an overdone story, right? Like, the Beauty and the Beast is a classic. It's like Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty. They've been retold a lot, so I think it was interesting to read a book that still felt fresh while telling this same story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. If they didn't use Beast names and Beauty, I wouldn't have even noticed it was a retelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think the time thing was really cool for it too, to fix up some of it. Like, the timing of Beauty and the Beast does not make sense at all. Like, if he was cursed as like a child,
oh,
like what kind of witch curses a child purposely? For not letting them in, it doesn't make sense. Like, he's a child in some versions.
Stranger danger.
Yeah, like the witch is terrible, and yet in the recent adaptation of Beauty and the Beast, the witch isn't evil. Like, she claps at the end and celebrates with everyone. Like, no, you're the villain.
Yeah,
but yeah, so I like the time thing that he's old, but he's not that old. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I thought the Will William thing was a little, they could have made it like, she seems so stupid for not being able
to clue
figure
in
that out.
Yeah
considering she's like, well, like, she's solving other riddles, and yet, oh, this one's too tough to crack. His name is William, and Will and Liam, they can't be the same.
Yeah, I was really like, I got so much secondhand embarrassment when she brings up at dinner, she's like, release Liam from the, while she's talking face to face with William, aka Liam, and everyone else knows.
How did she not figure that out? Yet she's supposed to be smart. Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish that was... I wish they made his name something other than Liam. Lawrence.
Okay. Yeah. That's fair.
Does the name William have any, like... Is the Beast's name William? I forget.
We could have been Bill, but that's pretty on the nose, too.
Okay. I'm gonna look it up. Beauty and the Beast.
Eric.
19.
Oh, yeah. No, Eric is Ariel.
Yes, that is
Eric
the
is
wrong...
the Phantom.
What?
Is the Phantom's name, and the Phantom of the Opera is kind of Beauty and the Beast.
Okay. Okay, so we've got...
You could have used the name Gaston.
See, they should have just named her Belle. Because I don't know.
Yeah.
That would have...
Yeah. I like Belly. No.
No, that's from The Summer I Turned Pretty. Her name's Belly.
Oh, Belly? My gosh. Belly.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
A belly?
Yeah.
Like a belly?
Isabella.
And they call her Belly.
Belly.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cute.
Okay, so according to Wikipedia, his name is either the Prince or the Beast. He has no name.
I they should have called him, like, Princeps.
Oh,
or
my
or
gosh.
Just Prince.
Yeah, like the pop star.
Okay, yeah. That would have been... Oh, can you imagine? That's funny. But yeah, that's so... That I don't know what they should have named him. But okay, this is funny. So we're going to sidetrack a little bit because I think this is funny. So I'm on the Wikipedia page for like the original 1991 Beauty and the Beast. Also, I thought it was older than the 91. So it's newer than I thought. But they describe what the beast looks like in the original one. So this is quoted from Wikipedia. Quote, the animators drew him with the head structure and horns of an American bison, the arms and body of a bear, the eyebrows of a gorilla, the teeth and mane of a lion, the tusks of a wild boar, and the legs and tail of a wolf.
Why?
I'm so sorry, but that's so funny.
Like, that explains so much.
Yeah, that is like... That's like from one of our other books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't, but like the eyebrows of a gorilla, that's so specific. Yeah. Like, why? The horns of a bison. I get that. I don't get the body of a bear, though.
Yeah. Maybe they should have said eyebrows of a gorilla. Maybe it's like brow bone of a.
Yeah, like facial structure, upper facial structure. But they don't specify what... Well, the head structure is of a bison. Anyways, this is off topic, but I just... Wow, I've never looked up what they... What would... Apparently, that's what they're envisioning.
Well, that's what Liam looks like at night?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's kind of confusing what he looks like at night. Because he says he turns into a different beast all the time.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
What? He kind of says...
Just a werewolf.
He says he turned...
I gotta find the quote.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
Yeah. No, he definitely... Yeah, well, also because the other reason we don't really know is because Beauty never gets to see him because he knows, obviously, when, you know, she sees him, she's gonna be like, oh, wait, you're Will. You got Will's eyes. Mm-hmm. Obviously, his voice must change because wouldn't you clue in on the voice?
Oh, yeah, I remember she does mention that. She says his voice is, like, muffled by, like, teeth or something.
Maybe that's the... Sorry, what was the tusks. The tusks? Yes. The tusks of a wild boar.
Nice. Handsome.
Very handsome. Yeah, this is just the weirdest description. I'm so sorry. I'm so distracted by this description. Did you find it?
Correct. It says, every night I change into a creature, an animal, just like everyone else in this cursed place. I interpreted that as every night I turn into a different creature.
Oh, gosh. Georgia.
I was like, so what is he tonight? Like, a rat? Like, I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. Turns into a pigeon.
Whoops. My reading comprehension did not shine there.
Okay. Well, we all make mistakes. I remember in Sweet Ruin, I definitely thought that her body aged till she was 22, but her mind stayed as a 12-year-old. So we all need to work on our reading comprehension a little bit, apparently. I don't, like, there's obviously plot holes that I think we've covered, like the fact that they never just explain the curse. And I can sort of understand why the author does that, because it's like, to trying to keep you reading and like engaged because you're like, oh, I want to find out what the curse is. But it's also annoying also to the reader because you're like, okay, just tell me the curse though. Like, I'm invested and I want to read, but like, just tell me the curse. I don't need to be like strung along. So I think that's kind of fair. And then also her father, you know, I don't get what's going on with that. Because it's supposed to be like, I think again, this like relates to a larger conversation we've had across all the books we've read this season, that like they mention trauma and they use trauma, but they don't actually like engage with the trauma.
I think
that applies because they like lay out that she has like, you know, trauma from being abandoned by her father, but then they never actually, maybe validate, like they don't validate the trauma. They're like, oh, she has trauma and she feels, you know, hurt by this and betrayed by this and sad by this, but they don't actually like let her keep feeling it, because she just immediately like, oh, I gotta go find my dad. I'm free from the house that my dad trapped me in. Let me just go find him now. I thought that was very strange.
Yeah. Like, on that note, when she goes to her boyfriend's house after she escapes using her key, and he says when he went to go find her, he was actually just doing it for a school project. That was so unnecessary to me.
Looking back on that part is so funny.
Because, like, that's horrible for her. No, he didn't come to save her. He just came for a school project. Like, that's terrible. And that would take a while to get over, especially after finding out your dad left you. So maybe they didn't need to do that.
Just picturing that is so funny to me, where she's like, oh, like, say she saw him. She's like, you gotta get me out of here. Help me. I'm being held against my will. And he's like, so I have this homework I need to get done. Can you help me with it? Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I know. Idiot.
And she's mad at William for turning him away.
At first,
it sounds like he should have been
turned away. So he's banging on the window asking, like, journalist questions. Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe he would turn him away. That was so random to me.
Yeah.
But they needed to make him evil. Even though they could have just said, oh, in that time they grew apart and he's dating someone else, so it's okay for her to date someone else.
Yeah.
They didn't need him to not be a normal person who would help her.
Yeah. It also just, like, I feel like this book started out pretty strong. The writing was pretty decent. Like, it wasn't, like, it's definitely suitable for, like, teenagers, preteens, children. But it doesn't feel childish until, I think, the end. And because the ending is so rushed, there's so many, like, there's so much dialogue and different writing that's just completely out of pocket. Like that. Because, like, in one sentence, he's like, oh, like, you know, we knew that your dad was lying and you didn't just go to the city and you didn't say goodbye. And so we wanted to come find you. But then he's like, oh, just kidding. I actually only went to the house to write an article about it. It was very weird. Like, it was just, they were definitely, like, forcing it. She probably wrote it and was like, oh, wait, I need to make him more bad so that it's obvious that she's in love with Will.
Yeah, that was definitely what I got.
Yeah. But supposedly she's been gone for, like, 6 months, so, like, she could have just,
I know, that was so unnecessary.
This guy is so ditzy.
Yeah, I know. But then he should have been in it more.
Yeah. I also think, like, every book, this book probably would have benefited from being dual perspective. Because then, like, maybe we could have seen the interaction between Will and, what's his name, Dan?
Drew.
Drew, okay.
I appreciate that it is one perspective, because all the other ones we read are two perspective. I like not knowing what's going on in someone's head sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'd rather not be there.
Also, like, sorry. I think the single perspective worked, except I thought it was funny how, like, we never got a character description of Beauty.
Yeah.
She kind of gave a description.
Oh, did she? I swear there was.
I don't remember any of it. Is her hair brown? Is it blonde? I bet you she has brown hair and brown eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she looks just mousy.
But I was like, I thought it was interesting, like, that she's kind of blank. And they could have used that to fill in, like, clues about what she looks like over time. But, like, that was one case where I thought maybe a dual perspective could have helped. But other than that, I felt I like single perspectives for, like, mystery stuff. And Beauty and the Beast is usually kind of a mystery, so I was expecting that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think that's a fair point, because it would have been a lot harder to have a mystery if we could have read Will's perspective, because he would have given away everything to us as the reader, because he knows more than Beauty does. So,
and then he's kind of like Yeah, he's like a mysterious character himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's part of the mystery. So if we could have read his perspective, then we would have been like, oh, well, we don't have to read the rest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that's fair.
Stevie has something to say.
I'm glad. I. Y'all have a much more distracting environment than I do. I'm just sitting here in the studio. I don't have any cute cats or funny cameras to distract me. But that's okay.
You're professional.
I am professional.
Hey. This isn't professional.
All right. So going back to the dad thing, we've kind of already touched on this a couple times, but I really don't understand Beauty's character and, like, when she makes excuses for, like, oh, like, I really love my sisters, but they don't talk to me at school. And my mom is really nice, but also she treats me as if I'm not her child. Like, I felt like those were very, and then also, like, the throwaway line of, like, oh, like, I'm not actually my dad's daughter. So did you find that stuff took away from the novel that much, or did you kind of just, like, fly by and you're like, oh, that's whatever?
Yeah.
I think when I read it, I actually thought it was vastly more mature of her to think that way than how her family treats her. Mm-hmm. So I guess it kind of signaled her character a little bit.
Yeah, I think it could have been developed a little more, maybe with some more backstory, and then her, like, coming to terms with the fact that her family's not perfect. Like, that would have signaled why she's okay with it. Versus it just being used to, like, make her character not angry or something. I think it could have been more interesting way than it was.
Yeah.
It would have been sweet if, like, her sisters had been looking for her.
So, Laura, when you say, like, it makes her more mature to act like that, is it kind of, like, the idea that instead of just being like, oh, like, my family hates me, they're so mean, it's like, I'm just going to be a nice person and I'm going to be kind to people? Because...
Oh, I guess it's not more mature, but she's practicing a lot of empathy for them.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe more than they deserve, but she's still doing that, so she doesn't, like... I don't know. She doesn't obviously bring up the trauma of, I don't know. Well, just that, like, yeah, maybe she's making excuses. Maybe she's coming to terms with their actions. She's trying to see it from their perspective. Either way, it makes it seem like she's practicing more complicated emotional, I don't know, awareness, I don't know, than they are probably.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's also interesting because I think that is supposed to be a characteristic of Beauty, like Belle in Beauty and the Beast. Like, she's supposed to be very caring and, like, she's kinder to people than what they deserve, which is why, you know, she sacrifices herself for her dad. And then in... Well, not really in, I don't really remember the original one, but I'm thinking about, like, the Beauty and Beast retelling in, like, Once Upon a Time, the TV show. I don't know if either of you watched that, but, like, the character Belle in that show, like, that's her character. Like, she's very empathetic and she's very kind and, like, giving to people. To an extent, like, they don't deserve, but that's the whole reason of, like, why she's able to, you know, fall in love with this, like, rude, arrogant beast person. So I think that's fair, definitely, Laura, but I still, like, I agree with you, and I think it does contribute to, like, her character. And yeah, it makes sense, like, she sacrificed herself to save her father basically for her stepsisters and for her stepmother.
Yeah,
like, that was a very selfless act. So yeah, I agree with that. But I also think what you're saying, Georgia, like, flushing it out more and, like, explaining more, because I think that's where I came from. Like, it was very, I don't know, I could have done with more background, like establish, like, you know, like what was her relation, even if we got some flashback scenes or something to establish what her relationship was like with her family, because we don't really get to see it. So it makes it, yeah, I think, harder to imagine.
Yeah, that would have been provided more context. But thinking on it, like, we do see indicators of, like, her personality. Like, when she's super mad at William, she storms off to her room. And she's like, he's been a jerk to her, so she's obviously mad. But then the housekeeper, like, is like, okay, come down when you want to, but we're all rooting for you. And she's like, oh, wait, there's more than just William who needs my help with this curse. And she's just, like, able to, like, move past it because she knows she can help more people.
Yeah.
So she's very, like, she's very emotionally just determined and, like, mm-hmm, willing to put others' needs before her own, I guess. But that is the character of Belle throughout the fairy tales.
Yeah. This is making me realize, like, one of my issues I have with, like, a lot of fairy tales is that, like, these female characters never have, like, flaws.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Belle's always just perfect and caring and reads and things and can do and super empathetic. Like, mm-hmm, her storming off wasn't, like, not justified. So she still seems very rational, and I kind of wish, like, for a modern or, like, a YA retelling, they'd given her, like, something that was irrational. Except she's never really irrational in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she has, I guess, immature fights with him.
Yeah, but he starts it a lot of the time.
Yeah, doesn't mean she doesn't finish it.
I guess, but she's also 17.
Yeah.
I just feel like they could have added some, like, you know, some things she has to grow.
Yeah.
Instead, it's in Beauty and the Beast specifically, all the growth is always on him.
Well, I mean, it was kind of neat because at the end, he, like, when they're, she comes back to save them after she's able to escape, and he apologizes for treating her the way he did and lying to her. And she also apologizes for what she's done. So
which is...
I forget, yeah, what she says, but she's, like, holding the whatever, and she says, like, I'm sorry, too, for doing this.
Yeah, I know. It's just that she's pretty still perfect in this.
Yeah.
I mean, I think she's very rational, but, like, yeah, I also don't think she's, like, Belle from the fairy tale, to be honest. Like, okay. Belle from the fairy tale is very, like, blankly perfect.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting how they made her, like, she doesn't like to read. She just likes to destroy the books. That's not very Belle-like at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that's cool. But I like how she's kind of, like, just, like, she's the one who initiates everything. Like, she's determined to go to the fairyland. She goes there. She's determined to keep investigating the curse. Like, she's really what drives the story along. He's used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
He doesn't solve his own curse at all.
Yeah, he's been sitting around for 4 years not doing anything. I do wish the side character like the sister, had been in it more. I thought it was interesting how she was turning into a rose.
Yeah.
And then, but she didn't get enough, I don't think. Like, because what was the purpose of him having a sister, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I wish she'd had more. Rose.
She's the rose from the fairy tale.
I know. We objectified her.
Okay.
I kind of wish that she'd been more of a integral character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Let's very quickly review some other parts, and then we'll go to a quick ad break, and then we'll just wrap up with talking about more about the ending. But yeah, very quickly, romantic parts. Shockingly, I think this is the most romantic book we've read, which is funny because it wasn't. But like there was that one scene with the strawberry ice cream that until, you know, she found out that he lied, you could consider that romantic.
Oh, yeah.
Which is
he planned a date for her.
Yeah.
A date is romantic, I'd say, and very few of these books have dates in them.
None of them have dates.
Yeah.
So that was funny. Nice. And then, like, do either of you have, like, a favorite scene, favorite part, favorite kind of, like, plot element? I just like the scenes where they were in the library because I always like to picture really grand libraries in my head. I also liked reading about the sailboat because my brain was trying to process how big this room was to be able to fit a sailboat, which I don't think it ever did process that. So
I like when she humbled him when he like tried to kiss her and she's like, no.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah, I liked when she's. I guess I liked their date scene before he kind of ruined it, but
before he ruined it
was it. It was nice to have a romantic scene.
Yeah,
that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, I think that was refreshing. Yeah, but I think I also like because well we'll get to this more after the ad, but I do think very quickly that it was annoying how quickly they went from being like friends to then in love without the date. Like I felt like it would have made more sense if we almost had more scenes that were like dates to like establish that. But I get that it's a fantasy YA novel, so of course they just end up falling in love because they're 17. But I think that could have been good to actually, like, have those dates and then have her find out. However, we'll get into the ending when we come back. So we're going to take a very quick ad break. And, yeah, when we come back, we'll finish talking about this book.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra Siam, Nisiyam, Nisiyaya,
and the Skakuya, Talitin, Homasquim, Mustail. Do you love being caffeinated? And do you hate that greedy, soulless international conglomerates are succeeding in the cutthroat world of coffee? Sounds like local coffee roasters Trek Coffee is for you. Trek Coffee is 100% indigenous and military veteran owned and operated. Let's keep small businesses thriving. Stop by Sunshine Convenience on 4th, the Super Value on Commercial, or Grocery Checkout in the Nest to pick up some Trek Coffee today.
Every Friday at noon, CITR takes you on a journey through Thunderbird Radio Land. A journey of sound and song, of words and music, of the now and then, of the right here and the far away. It's the Eclectic Lunch, every Friday at 12 noon on Thunderbird Radio, 101.9 FM in beautiful Vancouver.
Do you want to... All right, you are back listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This is the show Dog-Eared Radio Book Club, and I'm your host, Randy. I'm also joined by co-hosts today, Laura and Georgia, and we are talking about the book, The Curse Girl, by Kate Avery Ellison. So we're going to, I think, dive more into that book. Just close out the ending. So, yeah, we left off. I was just mentioning how they had, like, the one, quote-unquote, romantic scene between Will and Beauty, and then that was very quickly ruined when Beauty found out that Drew came to visit her and Will didn't tell her. So then she was really mad. So actually, then she proceeded to complain to William and then found out William is Will. So she went to bed and cried. And when she woke up the next morning, she found a key. And because she made a key out of paper, which is, I've never seen that before, but that's interesting. And then she takes the key and she escapes the house to find out her family has abandoned her to go to the city. And Drew has abandoned her to date another girl because he just wanted a story for the newspaper. So she proceeds to discover that she was wrong. She takes a bike and she goes back to the house, and then she goes to the fairy land, magic land, whatever, to save Will and Rose and the rest of the house. And so she somehow, in between all of this, figured out what the curse was, and the curse was actually Marion betrayed Robert. And so she decided to turn him into a beast until he forgave her. I really don't know. Honestly, this is my point. I was so confused. So she breaks the curse by admitting that she loves Will and that she forgives him, I think. And then he forgives her. So he breaks the curse. But then Marion's like, no, I'm still going to kill you. And then she turns her dust with a mirror. I think that sums up like the last 20 pages.
Yeah. That helped.
So I guess I don't really know what question to ask. I think I'm just kind of, I'm pretty stuck because I feel like the ending, we've already established it was rushed. It just didn't really, yeah, it felt like they were just forcing everything at once. So I guess maybe the question should be, like, what would you change?
Well, I think it needs to be clearer on why Marion was mad at William's older brother, Robert. Again, I know they kind of explain it. Why did she curse everyone else but Robert, who seemingly died shortly after their relationship?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to read you from the end of the novel. Okay. So yeah. This is Beauty talking. I think it was you who betrayed Robert. Will sucked in a sharp breath. Marion went silent. The baby, I said. Robert leaving you. It all points to one thing, doesn't it? Marion shivered. And I guess you thought it was pretty clever of you to make him forgive you for real before you'd lift the werewolf curse on him. Of course, Will doesn't love you, so when you cursed him by mistake, the solution was completely out of your hands. Whether you want to release him from it or not. And as the curse consumed him, it consumed you too. It made you crazy. Her mouth opened and closed, like her words were stuck in her throat. She didn't try to deny anything I'd said. So I think that's like the flip, is that Robert didn't do anything. So I initially thought that Marion killed Robert, but that doesn't make sense. So I guess Robert just died tragically. He just died tragically.
Yeah.
And yeah, because he died, the curse then went to the next man in line in the family. I don't know. So then yeah, Will ended up cursed.
Well, maybe she cursed the house.
Yeah, so it sounds like, because don't they do mention before that magic is volatile and it's hard to control.
Mm-hmm.
So she couldn't control it. I guess it is kind of a clever twist that, like, you think, oh, she's been wronged by Robert. But it turns out she might have been the one that was unfaithful and needed to be forgived. I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think that's interesting. I think, yeah, they could have explained more why, how this was set up for Will to be able to. Like, they could have shown Beauty figuring it out a little more. Because she sort of just is like, oh, I got it. Could have like had a build up, like a scene where she almost solves it and then comes out with the revelation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that would have been good.
Yeah, like kind of like, I really like those scenes when the hero confronts the villain and gets like half of it right, but then the villain says something or does something that clues in the hero, and then the hero's like, wait, now I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it could have benefited from one of those scenes. But yeah, I think that was, I don't know, honestly, rereading the ending, because I read it twice, because I was like, I don't know what that just happened. I'm very confused. I think that was, I'm in a similar boat to you, Georgia. Like, I wanted more clarification. And yeah, just kind of, I just spread it out more. I don't know. This book was pretty short. So they had, in my opinion, they had space and room to, like, spread the ending out, to elaborate on things more, and, like, tie things up with more of a pretty bow tie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like, even, I'd say try not to finish. If you don't have time to finish everything you want to finish, maybe you can do a end on a hopeful note or something.
Yeah.
Well, I sort of wish there had, yeah, been that theme about forgiveness sort of building up, like with her father leaving. She has to forgive him, and sort of that would lead to her revelation, maybe, about why it's about forgiveness, something like that. Like, I think would have been a clever way. Or like, she has to do that. She is angry at her father, and then the curse is to forgive Will, and then she realizes after that now she needs to work on forgiving her father or something.
Yeah,
that would have been interesting.
Yeah. Could have been a hopeful note on that.
Yeah. If, like, forgiveness is what lifts the curse up, then just throw it around everywhere. Solves every problem.
Yeah. I don't know. I also, like, part of me wants a reason. Like a conversation before you're just like, oh, I forgive you. Like, I don't want to explain this, but, like something to be, like, I forgive you because I realize that you didn't mean me harm. Like, I get that that's implied, but I felt like it could have been beneficial to just explain it and be, like, this is why I'm able to forgive you. Because, and I think it's only needed in this case because it happens so fast. Like, she just literally less than 12 hours later just forgives him and is like, oh, it's fine. You completely betrayed me, but I don't care. I felt like that could have been also a growth in beauty to be like, I forgive you because of this, or I forgive you, you know. I don't know. I felt like that maybe could have, like, benefited, at least for me, like, in my personal experience of reading the book.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel similarly, but, I mean, so she could have, like, realized she doesn't have to forgive him for not, for turning away Drew because he was just doing a school assignment, and then, like, forgiving him for not telling her that he was the beast. I don't know, I don't even know if he needs to be forgiven. Like, she should have figured that out.
Yeah. I forgive you because I'm stupid. And I'm embarrassed.
He's like, I thought you were just acting like you couldn't tell that we were the same person.
Yeah, you're just pretending you didn't know. Yeah. No, that's funny. No, I think that's fair. I don't know, like, I'm imagining in my head, like, I forgive you because, you know, I realize it was hard for you to admit that you're the beast and you didn't want to scare me away because you felt like you finally had a friend. Yeah, and I get that that's kind of, like, obvious and implied, but I felt like with the circumstances of it happening so fast, I needed some sort of explanation. Even if she would have had, like, an internal revelation that we read as the reader, I think that would have helped, but just something to establish, like, this is why I feel like I can forgive you, and not just, I forgive you. I don't know. Anyways.
Yeah.
I think that's just, like, my own personal grievance. But, yeah, I think that kind of brings us to the end. Overall, I do recommend this book. I think that it's good. Definitely, if you're, like, a teenager or if you know a teenager in your life, I would say, like, 12 to 14, maybe 15. Would really enjoy this book, and it's honestly, like, a super quick read. It's light, it's fun, it's got some adventure, mystery. I'd give it a go. Any final thoughts before we move on to our final segment of the show?
Other than as much as I enjoy reading some retellings, they're vastly overdone. So some authors, please stop doing retellings.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Beauty and the Beast 2 is like my least favorite one. Mm-hmm. Well, no, I can't even say that. Cinderella, oh, all of them.
Yeah, Cinderella.
But I think there you can explore some ideas of it. And this book did a pretty good job of fixing some of the problems that I really don't like about Beauty and the Beast. So yeah, I liked it because of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. Like I said at the beginning, I do think it offers a bit of a fresh perspective and idea about Beauty and the Beast, so it didn't feel repetitive. But I'm also with you, Laura. Come up with a new idea. You know, we've seen it. We've seen this before. It's not all that new. But yeah. All right. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of us talking about this book. I hope either if you read it, you enjoyed the discussion, or if you haven't read it, maybe you'll go out and read it, even though we spoiled literally everything in the book. But it is a book club, so you should be prepared. But to close us out on this episode, I just very quickly want to reflect back on our season, because this is the last book of season 2, the monster romance season for Dog-Eared Radio Book Club. The next season we are doing, season 3, will be science fiction. Quite a turn, I think. Also something new for me, because I legitimately never read science fiction novels. I tried to find a single science fiction novel on my bookshelf today, and I found none. But that's okay, because I know people that read science fiction. So just as a shout out, our next episode will be on November 8th. That's a Tuesday. And we will be reading and talking about Claire and the Sun by Kazuo Ishiguro. I'm not sure how to pronounce that name, so my apologies. But yeah, check out the book and then listen to the episode. But yeah, going back to the season reflections, my first question is, what book was your favorite to read and why out of the 6 books that we read this season?
The funnest book, I guess, I like the Barbarian one. I thought it is pretty good, like, summary. A good monster romance or alien romance. It covers a lot of tropes, and it doesn't cross that line. Comes close, but not as close as the others.
Yeah.
For me, in terms of favorite beast, is definitely the Ice Planet Barbarian. Favorite beast. But the book, not based on quality, but I had a good time and a wild time reading it, was definitely Sweet Ruin.
Oh my gosh. I knew you were gonna say that.
Took me through a lot of emotions. Mostly
rain. I think I'm with both of you. Like, Barbarian's Mate by Ruby Dixon to me stood out as probably the best book that we talked about this season. Like, that I would actually legitimately be like, you should read this book, it's entertaining and good. Like, The Cursed Girl I would as well, but I think because it is a YA novel, like, you know, out of the adult novels we read, Barbarian's Mate was the only one I liked more the more we talked about it. Like, the episode mm-hmm. made me like it more, whereas the episode, like, whenever we discussed the other books, it just made me hate them more. Like, I like Deceived by the Gargoyles until we talked about it on the show, and then I was like, wow, this book is terrible and I hate it. And I enjoyed The Dragon's Bride until we talked about it on the show, and then I was like, oh no, this book is wild. Not in, like, a bad way, but I think just, like, to me, it just points out how passively I read. Like, people are like, how do you read so much? It's because I just read it. It's like when you watch a TV show. You don't critically analyze everything in a show. You just consume it. So it's very different to, like, consume something and then go back and actually, like, critique it and, like, dive into it. Also, I don't think any of these novels are meant to be analyzed as like a book club novel. But I think that's why this season was so much fun, because, you know, these books are wild. Like, they're legitimately just wild books.
They're all fun.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like fun, right? Because you're like dealing with your imagination and like beasts and monsters. But yeah, I will say, like, Barbarian's Maid, I legitimately did like more, I think, after we talked about it. Because I was like, oh, like, this is... And I was honestly just, like, surprised by it. I did, however, try to read another one of this series, and I did not like that as much.
So, definitely hits and misses in there.
Yeah, so I'm not going to give it, like, an all-encompassing, like, you know. But yeah, overall, it was good. But yeah, Sweet Ruin, I think, was the most entertaining book that we talked about, because that book is 10,000 types of ridiculous. So I don't have any books rated one star in my book journal for this year, but I did rate that book one star because I was like, I might have given it two for the entertainment value, but I don't know, either 1 to 2 stars, which is, I don't have any books really that low in my book journal normally. But I'm still glad that we read it, because I learned a lot of interesting things from that book. Yeah. I also very quickly have a follow-up on our last episode from The Dragon's Bride. That's what it's called, yes. So I don't know if people remember, but we were talking in that episode, me and Georgia, about another book that exists for one of the characters, which I'm going to pull up the name right now. So I actually read that book. I found it on Kindle Unlimited, and I read it. And I'm here to tell you that it is... Okay, so it's this one. So it is called... Demon's Bargain? Yes, by Katie Robert. So this book is one of the side characters that's in The Dragon's Bride. So Ramanu? Is that... I think that's what we decided his name was. So he's a bargaining demon. Yeah, and this book is so much better than The Dragon's Bride. So I'm going to go ahead and recommend that if you read The Dragon's Bride... or if you're like, oh, that's interesting, but I don't actually want to read it, go read this book. So it's called The Demon's Bargain, and it's by Katie Robert, the same author. But yeah, so I just wanted to highlight that because we were questioning what we thought it was going to be like, and I was pleasantly surprised reading it, I have to say, which surprised me. I know I've said that word too many times in this sentence, so I'm going to stop. But yeah, any other final thoughts on this season before we wrap up this final episode?
Yeah, I think I just wish these monster authors like added more drama to their books. Like, you have monsters, just like go for it. Like, I wish there was more entertain, like, I wish monster, having one character be a monster didn't like give them a pass to make a boring plot. And I just wish that, like, you know, they explored it more. So I hope I find more books where there's a lot of, it's a plot driven monster romance.
Right.
Or like like romance plot driven, not plot in their world. Like, oh, some of them. If it's a monster romance, add some romance into it.
Yeah.
That's what I'll say.
Agreed.
Yeah. That's fair. Laura, what about you?
Well, I had a good time. I love reading monster romance. It's amazing seeing these characters. Yeah, I would say definitely, like, show me these two characters actually like each other. That's step one. They don't have to start off liking each other, but in the end, I hope they like each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. It's also funny because that is the same critique that we had in the very first episode of Dog-Eared Radio Book Club, where my co-host said the exact same thing. Show me that these characters like each other because I don't believe that they do. and I think that's an important lesson to all romance authors out there. Prove that there's romance because you can't just tell us this isn't a early 2000s drama show where you can just put a man and a woman in a room and make them sleep together and then be like, oh, they're in love. That's not what's happening here. We're going to be more critical than that. But yeah, all right. Well, I want to thank you again for being on multiple episodes this season and also for helping me plan the season because you did suggest a few of the books that we have on the list. I also really enjoyed it. I do think I'm coming to the end of my monster romance phase, though. I'm moving back into college sports, which I don't know why. You can thank Kindle for that. Kindle is really dictating what I'm reading these days. But yeah, I think this was a really interesting experience to talk about these books and, yeah, analyze books that are completely the opposite of what you traditionally analyze in a literature class.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you once again, Laura and Georgia. I hope you have a fantastic week. And to the listeners out there, I hope you are able to stay dry in rainy Vancouver. And I hope you have a great rest of your Tuesday night.